Beware, spoiler phobes! You have stumbled into a storm of spoilers. From brightest day to Sunday nights, no episode escapes our sight. Let those who want plot details light beware our power, the spoilers might. This podcast is split into two sections, the calm and the storm. In the first calm section, we're discussing the season premiere of Lanterns on HBO, a television series that exists in the wider Warner Brothers DC universe. This season, the second storm section is reserved for the trailers, like this week's season-long trailer, and not direct knowledge of the 7 of 8 episodes provided to some critics. We are not ruining, we're enriching.
In brightest day,
in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power.
Hello, I'm Dave Gonzalez, and I've always suspected something nefarious was happening in Nebraska.
And I'm Neil Miller, and no evil shall escape my sight, regardless of time of day. And welcome back to A Storm of Spoilers. You're, of course, here for Lanterns, and we're very excited to talk about it. Here is some housekeeping before we get into all of that. Next week, guess what? More Lanterns. We've got 8 episodes of this first season, and we're going to do each and every single one of them on Mondays following their Sunday night HBO releases. So episode 2, we don't entirely know even what it's called just yet, but we'll figure it out as we go. How do you get in touch with this show? You can send us a raven, stormofspoilers@gmail.com. You can send us your questions, your corrections. If you're a lore head for the DC Comics universe, send us your theories and really anything, you even stuff for the storm. We would love to answer based on our own comic book knowledge and knowledge of TV productions and whatnot. So you can also review us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Leave us a 5-star rating. Say whatever you want. We didn't get any reviews this week, but we're out of the Thrones era again, so no shame, Bell. We did get a few as I was dusting out the Citadel of Crazy Town. A few more ravens to close us out. We got one from Pat, our beloved longtime listener, Pat, who, among other things, defended the size of Hugh's hammer after I made fun of it last week. So there is at least one person out there that thinks that Hugh has a very appropriately sized hammer in the House of the Dragon season 3 finale. And one from Nicole, who also wrote in several times over the course of Hot D season 3 and came to the conclusion that she isn't bothered by the adaptation choices, probably not as much as we are, as the source material isn't helping, being very vague and almanac overview history style. So I think that's all pretty fair. Some people disagree with George. I'm not one of them, but you know what? It's okay if you are. You can also get us on YouTube, youtube.com/@astormofspoilers, where you can get this podcast in video form. Make sure you like and subscribe and hit the little bell icon, which alerts you to when there is a new one so that we can be your second screen enjoyment for at least one day a week. And finally, most importantly, some would say, you can join us over at patreon.com/DaveandNeil, DaveandNeil, to materially support this entire project from top to bottom. You will also get, for your monetary support, more podcasts, which is such a delight. This month, what are we doing this month? Oh, it's August, heatwave time. This week, upcoming week, Dog Day Afternoon. Last week, Wet Hot American Summer, which got mixed reviews from the panel. So you'll hear us talk about movies that we're watching, storms that we're chasing, video games that we're playing. You also get access to our Slack, where I think most importantly, right now, you can get in on our Sunday afternoon live watches of Dark, the German time travel mystery show that we are doing as a rewatch project. If you subscribe at the highest level to our Patreon, you get podcasts every week about Dark as well, bringing your total podcasts from Dave and I to 3, which is pretty solid. I wouldn't call us the hardest working podcasters, but you know, we put out some stuff. And the Dark Watch Project just entered season 3. So if you're in for where it gets even weirder somehow, come join us. It's a lot of fun. We're having a good time on Sunday afternoons. That is, Dave, everything that is fit to print that is unrelated to the pilot episode of Lanterns.
The pilot episode of Lanterns, indeed.
I see the entendre just jumping off of naming it the pilot.
Indeed. Actually, this is, in the world of Hal Jordan's, probably the least pilot-focused introduction to Hal Jordan I've ever seen in my life. Because usually we're really leaning on the fact that this dude's a pilot. This time, we definitely get a taste of it from the very beginning. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. This is season one, episode one, pilot of Lanterns. It is written by Chris Mundy, David Lindelof, and Tom King, directed by James Hawes, who's done some Slow Horses. If you are a fan of Apple TV shows, i.e. spent years making fun of them, not anymore. What a year they're having for just good quality programming. Anyway, we're not talking about that. We're back talking about HBO this week on Lanterns. We open with a visit to 1996, where little John Stewart is learning about Hal Jordan on television, and it's making his brothers nervous. When their father comes home, he responds by testing his youngest's fear levels with Apple and a gun. Then we're off to 2016, where Stewart is now apprenticed to Jordan. He's frustrated with the training program and his oft-hungover mentor. And along the bumpy road to lunch at a taco stand, Stewart learns that there's a hail in Rushville, Nebraska emergency. And after traveling to Nebraska by uniquely different means, John and Hal investigate a mass shooting at a football field that very likely involves some aliens. They immediately run afoul of the local sheriff, played by Kelly MacDonald, which we saw on Dave and Neil's Pop Culture Adventure recently on Trainspotting. Mm-hmm. What a time jump for all of us, I believe.
Very different. She hasn't aged a day, to be honest.
I know what she looks like in 1996, though, so at least in my timeline of Kelly MacDonald, I could place her on all these timelines. But ultimately, they help the sheriff chase down and capture a suspect who looks like a redneck but could also be an alien. In order to get into the jail and interrogate the suspect, Hal devises a plan to annoy an entire bar and get his ass beat. But before he does, he hits us with a monologue about his origin story as Green Lantern. Jordan gets his beating, gets hauled off to jail, all while Stewart gets picked up by a seemingly random lady for a hookup at a Ford F-150. When Stewart goes to pick up Hal the next day, he's in a closet. Then he's in a courtroom being arraigned before being saved by a local lawyer, played by Jason Ritter, who happens to be the sheriff's husband and the son of the local rich guy who wants to meet the Green Lantern. But Daddy Bailbucks also turns out to be the employee of a mysterious rich libertarian militia-having doomsday prepper, played by Garrett Dillahunt. Where was your first you really noticed Garrett Dillahunt's television moment? Mine was definitely that Terminator series he did where he was the Terminator. That was really impactful on me.
I mean, he's really good in Justified, but that's not the first time.
Yes, that's true. He's also, I could have just said favorite. That's also very, very
He's also
valid.
Pretty great in Deadwood, for anybody who's watched Deadwood, who watched it live.
Also excellent in Deadwood.
Garrett Dillahunt, just one of the great all-time that dudes. Hey, it's that dude.
He's back as a that dude. We're going to talk about the Makins definitely this week. After John teaches the sheriff's kid to throw football with his mind and learns that the sheriff's mother-in-law was the previous night's hookup, the Lantern boys get the green light to talk to the suspect. I like what you did there. You're like, I see.
There's going to be more of that as we go along, I assure you.
The interrogation goes smoothly until the subject of Barack Obama comes up, allowing Jordan to expose the suspect, who turns out to have had a biometric neutron device woven into his skull, and boom goes the alien. Then it's one final time jump to 2026, where a snowy Nebraska has clearly seen some rough times. John has returned to investigate another shooting, but this time it's a ringless, nearly frozen Hal Jordan who took the bullet. Dun, dun, dun. I have a lot of thoughts.
Sure. I have one thought off the top, Dave.
Yeah.
Did it also feel to you like a warm blanket to be watching an episode of television that takes place across 30 years, three times that are
it is a lot like our Dark Project. Yeah. Well, also what it's really been helping me with on this series so far is noticing the patterns and the gaps.
Sure.
Because I do think this series as a pilot is very, very interesting. And I think a lot of the negative reactions to it are obviously people who are a bit more concerned about the lore. I haven't seen any negative reactions to this as a pilot, which I think is a great sign for
the real ball knowers, the real TV watchers are like, oh, multiple timelines, Damon Lindelof in the credits. I'm in.
Baby. Not even a hidden bad dad, just right up in the top.
Yeah, I don't even care what these rings are all about.
So the great thing about that is I think a lot of things that happen this week is setting expectations for the show and the question about how pleased you're going to be about when the show ends, I think, is going to be based on the expectations you have after this first episode. Mm-hmm. So there are some things that I think are questions you're supposed to have. They are not necessarily plot holes. Very specifically, if you are a Green Lantern fan, and usually we would, you know, treat, I think, sort of like the source material is like a stormy thing or a little bit more separate.
Sure.
But Green Lantern isn't something that I'm especially well versed in. So I'm just going to steer clear of anything that I think is being directly adapted. I'm just going to say the whole, there's one, you know, Green Lantern for Earth or per sector. That's not a real rule. That's a rule that's made up here.
Yeah. I mean, it's also important to note, especially here at the beginning, that they're not adapting any specific comic storyline.
Correct.
This is more of a, we're trying to deconstruct and execute the vibe of Green Lantern. So think about this less as, you know, a creative team trying to adapt a specific series of comic books. Like this isn't Secret Wars being adapted for the screen. This is more like when Christopher Nolan was like, I want to deconstruct the lore of Batman and make my own trilogy. That's kind of what this feels like to me. So you have to be a little bit less precious about like specific rules and specific, I mean, I'm, you know, we'll talk about it, especially in the storm when we get to the, like the weeks ahead trailer. There's some very specific stuff that's going to show up in this show.
Yeah.
And I think the Damon Lindelof himself said in the behind the scenes of this episode, like there are certain key things that they think are essential to the Green Lantern story, like the oath for one. So like they're going to get those in there. But yeah, this is a grounded HBO prestige version of Green Lantern. So it's not going to be doing all of the same stuff that the previous Ryan Reynolds movie did poorly.
Right. And when we were talking about, you know, naming all the actors who popped up here, this is a episode of television where I basically I loved every performance. Mm-hmm. If I had to pick one performance that wasn't like a standout for doing something interesting, it's somebody at the taco stand, probably the taco stand owner, maybe the mother who's just like ushering a child away, but like a very, very side character.
The background players.
Yeah. I'm into all of these, both for what they represent in terms of like a comic book adaptation, because I think a true detective version of Green Lanterns or the Lantern Corps, I think is a very, very interesting take on it, especially if they're going to kind of mess with the rules a little bit and at least have us, the audience, understanding that it's a one ring, two guy sort of situation. Mm-hmm. And we're supposed to have sort of a passing of the torch, but the older Lantern is not willing to give it up. Hal Jordan has other things going on and it seems sort of like prickly. That being said, Kyle Chandler, batting 1,000 in this episode, as far as I can tell.
He's really great. And I do think that like the tension of the story between Hal Jordan and Jon Stewart is also going to be sort of a meta read on the tension between how closely we adhere to the lore of something like this and how we kind of break away from it. Right. Because like even just in their relationship, Hal is like, well, this isn't how it's supposed to go. The ring is supposed to choose you because the ring chose me and I'm old school like that. And, you know, I think that that's sort of one of the themes that will be concurrent throughout the entire season, which is Hal's dogmatic approach to how Lantern Ship should work, and John Stewart's slightly more, I would say, progressive approach. Although, you know, I would say the first scene of this episode gives me question as to whether or not as to what it is that's going on here with John Stewart, mostly with John Stewart's dad. And like,
yeah,
was he being groomed or raised to become a lantern? And what's that all about? Sort of
deal. I guess here's the question. Was he being groomed or raised to be a lantern by his dad, or had he already been selected like as a child? So his dad's just doing his duty by the galactic order of things.
Also a good question.
So I think there's very fun things in that. That's different from a couple different versions of John Stewart's family. There have been a couple versions of it. But this sort of like partner thing, this reluctant partner thing, there is, in the comics at least, Hal Jordan partnered up with Guy Gardner before this, and that is the character that Nathan Fillion played in Superman, and Superman takes place in 2025. Mm-hmm. So I think either A, the show is going to directly address why suddenly there are two lanterns on Earth and everybody's cool with that.
Sure.
After it seems like through the 90s there was one. Seems like, at least. And then the other thing is, I think that also if they didn't want to deal with that, they could very quickly dismiss it with like a hand wavy thing where it's like, and then Superman showed up and we got upgraded to two cops because then we're sort of like a player on the stage. It's also very possible that's part of, yeah, this particular story, because I do think that after watching this episode a couple of times, my biggest question is, what happened in 2006? That is the missing year in the time jump.
Yeah.
And it is mentioned by the hologram, which I think is a great thing to introduce. And I think the fact that it plays so cleanly as a concept in a pilot is interesting, because it's much more complex considering they don't actually explain what the upper limit of the ring's power is. Mm-hmm. We see it being used for some very low level stuff, and then also just sort of they throw off it manifests like a backup of an entire person that it's been holding.
Sure.
That obviously got some sort of exterior idea,
and they keep referencing it as like the most dangerous thing possible. Like, you know, right. Garrett Dillahunt's character calls it a weapon of mass destruction, and you know, it's otherwise a pretty unassuming, gaudy piece of jewelry. So I think this is kind of the fun thing the show can play around with, especially this grounded version of lanterns where it's like, we're gonna make this seem kind of unassuming, and then later we're gonna use our budget to show you it doing some crazy stuff, which I think is good, because you know, this is something I think, especially in a live action version of Green Lantern, you have to build towards. You have to get the audience primed for how the ring works before you show it, you know, like doing anything crazy. Then again, we've already seen the ring do crazy stuff in Superman. So I don't, you know, I think the audience for this, specifically for this version of the DCU, is already pretty primed to know what it's going to do. But we'll see.
Yeah. I like how Lindelof talked about it on the official podcast, where it's like, you don't want just because police officers have guns, you don't want them using a gun on like every situation that they come across.
In fiction, that's how it works, at least.
Exactly. So that's how you would like at least the lanterns to use their rings. So I appreciate that refocusing here, but I do think it's also a great place to hide a mysterious reason why Hal doesn't use his ring a lot, or why he doesn't use it for anything that I would say is integral for either him surviving or the people surviving. Because in the interrogation scene, which is probably my favorite scene of the episode overall, just in terms of the escalating scale from small town to, you know, intergalactic threat. But sort of the alien knows that he needs to charge it. And also the alien knows that hearing the oath of the Green Lantern at that point in Hal's life actually makes him angry. So again, I think something happened in 2006, which, as the hologram tells us, is the last time he backed up his consciousness. Whereas just now, I don't know if he's on the lam. Mm-hmm. I don't know if by the time we meet Hal in 2016, there's already a Guy Gardner with a ring, because Hal isn't supposed to have a ring. Like, I think there's a lot of possibilities in terms of the things we aren't seeing in this story and the people that are above Hal. So they have John Stewart not only be somebody who really respects the chain of command, they have him say that as a line in this episode, but also says, you know, like, everybody has bosses. So the television show is priming us through its language to have whoever is above the Green Lanterns, whoever has dominion on over Hal, to make themselves known somehow during this series. So I'm psyched with it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the question is, as somebody who is watching this, I guess if we had to rank our knowledge of Green Lantern, maybe that's a great place to start. Neil, what's your foreknowledge of the Green Lantern property?
I mean, I've obviously seen several times, unfortunately, the previous movie with Ryan Reynolds and Taika Waititi, which I do think primes us to get some of the, like, the check boxes of, like, what is core to the Green Lantern story.
Yeah.
You know,
that's a better way to ask it.
Yeah. I mean, I was curious that we didn't see any reference to the last name Ferris in this, in this first episode, and or Carol Ferris, who's Hal's love interest and test pilot boss. But that's fine. We may get into that. But I have read some comics, some Lantern comics. I think the Green Lanterns are a fascinating piece of this universe, again, because they are, as described in this episode, space cops. And there's such a weird, like, this feels like we're starting on the head of a pin as far as, like, what the depth and breadth of the potential story is.
Right? Yeah.
Like, we're just starting this very hyper-specific mystery on Earth that involves a lantern. And we haven't even sort of considered what are the other lanterns like, how many of the other lanterns are out there. Is green the only lantern color? I think there's allusions to the show opening up the wider universe a little bit. But we'll see. We'll see how deep they can go in 8 episodes. I think I know what they might be building toward, but it might not even be a season one thing. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that I have, like, a deep scholarship of the Green Lantern comics, but I've read enough to know what's going on here and to know that they got the oath correct.
Yeah.
And I know what the lantern does.
I think we're probably close to the same. I picked up Green Lantern in the early 2000s with, like, Rebirth. So I never knew a time without Hal Jordan, and I never knew a time without, like, a really complex series of space cops. Mm-hmm. So by the time I picked up Green Lantern, it came with a whole bunch of recognizable alien sidekicks, which it looks like this is going to sidestep as a series.
Sure.
Which isn't to say that we're not going to get aliens, or we're not. I mean, I hope we get alien lanterns, because that's part of what's inferred by the stuff in this first episode, but you're not, I don't think this one's going to be as focused as the 2011 movie is on showing you, like, that specific lantern that, mm-hmm. you know, was supposed to have a relationship the way they're leaving out the Ferris family.
Sure.
But I will say the strength, I think, of this episode using Hal Jordan the way it does is not only is it very shocking to have this series be about solving Hal Jordan's murder, but it sets it up in a way where, both through comic book logic and through television logic, there's a lot of ways we can get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it also sets up a boundary on Hal Jordan's active time as a lantern from 86 to 2026, which I understand could be seem limiting. It could seem like, to Hal Jordan fans, like, we're missing out on all these great Hal Jordan stories. Not really. You're kind of just missing out on great Hal Jordan stories that involve Superman, because sure. Superman doesn't show up till 2025.
Yeah. And also, from, like, a meta stamp, from a larger scale production standpoint, from a universe building standpoint, I think that this show is the jumping off point for having Aaron Pierre be in a bunch of movies.
Yeah.
Because I think, you hire Kyle Chandler to be in this perfect, I don't want to call it the Ned Stark role, but giving a short time frame of what we'll spend with Hal Jordan, but it'll be highly impactful because we got a great actor to just give us the pitch perfect performance. And then my assumption is we exit this series, however many seasons it's going to go, if it's one or multiple, with setting up the clear future movie star Aaron Pierre as John Stewart, the Green Lantern that fights alongside, James Gunn's Superman and all of the various characters. Like, I think it's cute that Nathan Fillion gets to be around as Guy Gardner, but I think anyone who's seen the movie Rebel Ridge, which was a few years back that Aaron Pierre was in, knows mm-hmm. that this dude is like on a stratospheric course to become a massive action star. So I think that like the casting alone leads me to believe that this is the jumping off pad for John Stewart as a cinematic character versus keeping Hal Jordan around. So it's like Hal Jordan's going to be here for a short time, but a good time.
Yeah. And I also think like if you want more Hal Jordan stories, the way the DC universe is operating is a very strange, but also in a way that I don't mind, where it was like the order of the DC universe is, my understanding is, Superman, Supergirl, Clayface. Those are the first three movies. Mm-hmm. And those are not characters getting like into their higher selling comic book characters. Those are we're going deeper down a hole. Very specifically, it looks like with Clayface, like a genre hole. Mm-hmm. And I think Lanterns is doing that as this sort of like true detective-ish TV series. And if they embrace that fully, that's a strength that I think they could gain like a leg up on in the superhero races.
It is, to me, and I don't think he said this, but it's James Gunn recognizing what the most successful portion of the MCU was when they all started to become character pieces, individual character pieces that also felt like each movie doing a riff on a different genre, right? The Captain America Winter Soldier era of the MCU, where it was like all of these feel like they exist in the same world, but they feel like they are different subgenres of cinema all coming to life. So if that's what he's doing, I'm super into it.
So I am hoping that's what it is. I am excited that Tom King is getting a chance to actually do an adaptation of like a gritty thing, but with superheroes, because he did write the Supergirl World of Woman of Tomorrow that was a riff on True Grit, but with Supergirl in a very colorful comic, and it got adapted into something that wasn't really that. So I have hope in this being a true detective-y thing. I knew when they were selling it to me, as like a pair solving a mystery. But I do think ultimately the thing that feels the most true detective is that it looks like it's one mystery over like 30 to 40 years, depending mm-hmm. on when we decide the start date to this particular instance is.
Sure. Well, and they've also mixed in a little bit of our good friend Damon Lindelof.
Yeah.
There's a lot of this, especially this first episode, that feels very Lindelof-esque, right? I mean, flashing between multiple time periods feels about right. The bad dad stuff, which we'll check in on. But also even like in the interrogation scene when they're using the two-way mirror to show reflections of characters on each side, I was like, oh yeah, Damon loves mirrors. This all feels very familiar to me. And so I think that pairing Tom King with Damon Lindelof is already yielding fruit.
Can't wait to see how it works. We're going to keep track of constructs. I think this is a great idea. And I do want to say at some point we can amend this, because I do wonder if maybe we see some constructs that we're unaware of this episode. Maybe I've got dark brain Neil.
Sure.
But I think I think in an episode where they make a very good point of being like, there are, you know, 6 to 8 aliens that can mimic humans down to like the medical level. Maybe we're seeing some stuff that is not as it seems.
Sure.
We'll get actually 14 more to that in the storm.
Different types of aliens.
14 but, different types yeah, of aliens. Right. Thank you. Many more. So the wing manifestation we see so far, bubble wrap, we're aware of, we're told, we get to see the beginnings of
sure.
it.
Sure. We don't get to see it, although that sounds fun.
It does sound fun. Flight. I mean, it does sound fun, but also if that was the first manifestation of like the ring and they released like that first 5 minutes to YouTube and that was the only manifestation of the ring, could you imagine the fan uproar that they just gave us the bubble wrap clip?
Sure. I mean, it's no giant hammer, but...
It's so giant hammer. Flight. It can manifest a fake $20 bill. It can be used as a cigarette lighter in sort of the push to heat car style. Mm-hmm. It could manifest a bottle opener, and it could make a bubble around a space nuke that could reduce the damage to just the shockwave through the town at the very end of the episode. So
I feel like it's a pretty good range of power. Right? Yeah. We see its life-saving power in the car crash scene. We see sort of the top level of like the alien describing his explosion being something that could wipe out the entire planet, and then Hal's able to just bubble it like Magneto in Marvel Rivals. It's pretty great. And then, you know, the silly shit. Like the cigarette lighter one is funny to me because I feel like that's only recognizable to like elder millennials and older. Because do cars even have those kinds of cigarette lighters anymore? I don't think most of them do.
No, I don't think so. It's been replaced with the USB port.
Right? Like my car is from 2004 and it has it, but it hasn't been that ever since I put a charger in there. So like, it, you know, that's at least 20 years ago when those things were still being put in cars. But
well, works. I mean, Hal would approve. That was his time.
Sure.
And then we have a quote here from Damon Lindelof interview with Discussing Film where they do talk about killing Hal Jordan that I want to use to wrap up my point real quick about the cool thing about this timeline. The fans are going to hate us. There were all these reasons not to do it, but the story kept pushing us to do it anyway, especially since we really wanted to serve the emotional stakes of their relationship. There's going to be some short-term anger and dissatisfaction, understandably. People have waited over a decade for Hal Jordan to return to their screens, and then suddenly he's a frozen corpse. But what matters most is what they're sitting, is where they're sitting at the end of the 8th episode, and whether they felt it was necessary for the a necessary turn for the story to move forward. I understand what he's trying to say with this, but Neil is, I think. Hal Jordan dying is first something that happens in 2026 when they open up a 86 to 2026 timeline of Hal Jordan being Hal Jordan sure. in a time skipping show. So I do think we're going to get lots more Hal Jordan in this series.
Sure.
And Hal Jordan dying in the comics is something that happens all the time. He comes back. Mm-hmm. He's a, you know, specter or another lantern. And you know, gets to come back. So I understand why people sure. could be frustrated, but I also feel like
again, this, as you just kind of described, this dead Hal Jordan at the end could be a construct.
Yes,
he's not wearing
the very ring. Well, could be a construct. I have lots of questions about why that dead Hal Jordan is wearing the same outfit as the Hal struct from 2006. Because my big question is, what's happening in 2006?
Sure. Well, and I agree that it's kind of, I also think I know what Damon Lindelof's trying to say here, but I have two thoughts. One is I think the whole point of this show is that we exit the show again with just Jon Stewart with the ring. And that's kind of the point, the marker, the mile marker that this show is going to exist for in the DCU. The other thing that I think is very funny about his comment here is that he says people have waited over a decade for Hal Jordan to return to their screens. And I'm immediately like, have they, though? Have they? I mean, I know there are a lot of hardcore DC fans who have been going through it over the last decade, over the cinematic, various levels of quality of the cinematic adaptations of the DC comics universe, right? And what was that? That was 2014, right? The previous Green Lantern.
2011.
Movie? Oh, 2011. That's even earlier. So this was like, it was in the Dark Knight era. So, but I'm old enough to remember what it was like when that movie came out and how it was just very bad. The reaction was very negative and it didn't do particularly well. I mean, I guess it did well for the time, but it was by no means successful enough to force additional movies with Ryan Reynolds as Green Lantern. Mm-hmm. And I think that comic book fans were pretty mad about how silly it ended up being and about how most non-comic book fans were just like, what the fuck even is this nonsense? So I don't know if people have been like on the edge of their seat waiting for the return of Hal Jordan. I would say that as someone who is a fan of good quality adaptations of any like source material, like a comic book, I'm excited to see them try something that is feels vastly different from what they did in 2011. And to try and, again, Christopher Nolan, the Green Lanterns, that's an interesting thought exercise. But I don't know if there's a ton of people being like, man, I can't wait till they bring Green Lantern back, man.
I saw like, a comment not, on the
Lanterns aren't Superman.
I saw a comment on the DC review thread subreddit for this. And the comment was like, how dumb do you have to be to kill off your most popular version of the character in the opening of your story? And the response to that was just Into the Spider-Verse. And it's like, right? Yes, that's,
yeah.
It is a way to tell a story, especially about, somebody having to take over responsibility and whether or not they were trained.
Sure.
This is like a perfectly fine thing. And just because Into the Spider-Verse happened doesn't mean we stop getting Peter Parker movies.
And I would say, unless you have some secondary motive for not wanting John Stewart to be the Lantern over Hal Jordan, can't imagine what that would be. I would say that this, you should just go along for the ride and see how it works out first, instead of being like, this is not my Green Lantern, I love Hal Jordan. You're going to get so much Hal Jordan, all right? I feel like we're going to get the full Hal Jordan experience. In fact, one might argue that with 8 episodes of television, we will get a more fully realized version of Hal Jordan than we ever got out of the 2011 movie. Just a thought.
I can believe that. I will say, Neil, there's one thing that feels very True Detective-y, and as much as I would love to get more lanterns and cosmic stuff into this series, I am thrilled with the Macon family of Nebraska.
Yeah, for sure.
I was a little saddened. I mean, it's cool in 2026 where he drives by and it looks like that compound with the militia, something horrible happened there and they never cleaned it up. Mm-hmm. So I can't wait to figure out where that happens.
Back to that.
Yeah, I can't wait to see where that happens. But I do love the casting here. I do love the setup here. I love the perspective of somebody who's obviously positioning themselves to be an antagonist, but sort of like a anti-colonist, also anti-alien racist. So basically a Southern Lex Luthor that knows how to barbecue,
sure.
Which I can appreciate.
Well,
I appreciate that stance.
And he's more like a Southern Lex Luthor's number one guy, right? Because he's talking about his employer, who's the real money in the situation. But it's Garrett Dillahunt, so he is the antagonist until proven otherwise of the show. And yeah, I mean, I enjoy all of the performances here. It's always great to see Jason Ritter, Mr. Melanie Lynskey himself. It's just a true delight. And obviously the Kelly MacDonald of it all complicates things for our lanterns. And I, you know, in True Detective fashion, we're going to have the ability to have multiple levels of does ACAB apply to these people discussions, right? Because we're dealing with like the actual human justice system with like a real sheriff. And also we're going to have to deal with like, are space cops a good thing? Like, should there be space cops? And I think it's in True Detective fashion, we're going to also have like these cop characters who are nebulously maybe not good people, but we're going to root for them because they're the only ones who can save the community. In this
case, I like that you put the question mark around nebulous, because my question mark would be around people.
Sure. Another fun layer to this show is that.
Yeah. It's like my employer. I'm like, is your employer another planet? Is your employer a corporation? Mm-hmm. Is your employer of this earth? Are you saying you're against colonization, but you've already made an allegiance with another outside force besides the Lanterns? Can't wait to find out. But it does also feel, especially with Ritter's performance, like they are going to speed run an entire season of Fargo. Mm-hmm. Of like, this town is taken over with this family, and this family has been able to do whatever it wants so long in the town. We have the possibility for some absurd situations.
Sure.
And I can't wait to figure out what they are.
Right. And the real danger seems to be Garrett Dillahunt's wife, who seduces Jon Stewart and is very sneaky.
I mean, again, people, question mark. Sure. But also, like, are they all of the same thing would be interesting, because I want to be on Kelly McDonald's side and think that she has been roped into this family. Mm-hmm. But she is married to somebody that I think has a high chance of not being from this planet when we get some more Ritter time.
Sure. Which would explain why her son is all state 10 years after not being able to throw a football.
He just got some advice from a future Green Lantern about how to, he got the secret, which is you just think it into existence. which reads differently when somebody has a magic ring than it does before. Neil, is there anything do you think we need to talk about before we move into the storm? And just a reminder to everybody who doesn't usually storm, we haven't actually seen future episodes. We've just seen, we have access to everything you have access to at this point. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be speculation based on that. We are not special
people on the HBO screeners list.
HBO doesn't like us. They've never really liked us.
We're not sellouts. That's fine. I did want to do a little bit of Damon Lindelof show tradition, which is Bad Dad Barometer.
Oh, yeah.
Like on a scale of like 1 to Christian Shepherd, how bad do we think these dads are? Because we get 2, right?
Yeah.
We get Garrett Dillahunt's wealthy militia having doomsday prepper consigliere character. Mm-hmm. Who is Jason Ritter's character's dad. The age thing is weird there, but that also could be TV language to be like, you should suspect whether or not these are human beings or not. I don't know if he's a bad dad yet, but I feel like he's a bad dude.
Yeah. Kelly McDonald seems to say he's a bad dude, and I believe her.
Sure. Sure. She currently is the gooey moral center of the show, as far as we can tell.
Here's what I'll say to, no pun intended, trigger people who rightfully think that Jon Stewart's dad is a bad dad. If a kid wants to grow up to be a Green Lantern and actually has no fear, mm-hmm. and you're shooting a gun at him, it's sort of like as if a tree falls. Like, I was always told by my mother to not like throw babies up in the air, because that smile they make is like a terror response or something. But then like other people just do it all the time. So like they like it. The baby feels weightless for a second and they trust you that you're going to catch it. And so I'm like, when is it necessarily like horrible child abuse if you're doing what the child wants and the sure. child has no fear?
Well, and there's, as you mentioned earlier, we have so many questions about when Jon Stewart was chosen to be a Green Lantern. So and you know what? There's just something off about Jon Stewart's dad that I think has made me have all kinds of. We got an email from Phelan, who, among other things, asked about, you know, whether we think there's more to the Jon Stewart's dad part of the story. And I was having similar thoughts along those lines, especially because he pops up, you know, multiple times in sort of important places as the sort of shadow mentor figure for Jon Stewart, as he's being trained by Hal, he's sort of coaching him through it. So there's like this idea that his military dad was either training him to be in a position to take up the mantle of Green Lantern, or he already knew that he was going to be the Green Lantern and he was already doing this, which I think the latter would make a little bit more sense to me. The other question that we could raise, because we've raised it for a bunch of other characters at this point, is that Jon Stewart's real dad?
Yeah.
Or is that someone that the higher ups of the Green Lantern Corps sent down because they knew that this kid was eventually going to become a lantern, and they were like, we're going to invasion of the body snatchers, your dad, and he's going to teach you to have no fear so that we don't fuck this up. Because as the show is presenting, this is a new strategy for the bosses of the Green Lantern Corps, where it's like, they're not letting the ring choose here. They're like, we need to make sure that the next guy is not a drunk like Hal Jordan. So we're going to make sure that this kid grows up fearless, vegan, who does not drink and is also, yeah, you know, built like a brick shit house and is not, you know, the kind of guy who will just get his ass beat in a bar, like Hal Jordan. So I think that there's a lot of questions about Jon Stewart's dad, and I'm watching a Damon Lindelof show, so I'm expecting this to be a big thing. I'm expecting this to be an important part of Jon Stewart's story that gets us from point A, he's in training, to point B, he flies off to go help the Justice League in the next movie.
I would say bare minimum in terms of getting more from Jon Stewart's dad, and I don't expect it to be this. I expect to get a lot more, but bare minimum, they'll bring him back just to contrast in scenes where we see Hal act as like not the father. Mm-hmm. Like Jon Stewart's dad was very orderly. He's making him keep a cool head in this episode when he's on the phone. He's like, "Dad, you tried to kill me." He's like,
"Sure,
just keep on. You'll get the job."
I imagine he had a great deal of influence on John's adherence to the hierarchy, you know, the chain of command.
Yeah. And it is terrifying and bad dad behavior to shoot an apple off your kid's head, no matter how much the kid doesn't mind it. So I do think eventually we're going to see the positive sides to whatever Hal Jordan's doing in terms of trying to teach Jon Stewart something, because it does seem like messy and opposite his dad. Mm-hmm. Whether the show is going to make a qualitative judgment that one is better than the other seems a little too black and white for this show. I think it's just both like, here's two different types of bad dads.
Yeah.
And it takes all kinds to make a Green Lantern.
Bad dads everywhere. The Damon Lindelof experience.
Indeed. And maybe just the life experience, but definitely the life experience on David Lindelof shows.
Yeah, I'm here for
all right. Let's talk about some of the crazy places this season could go as we head into the storm.
As one my gut always told me, that crash was no accident. When it says there's a shitstorm en route, I make sure there's a lookout to tell me when it's fucking coming.
All right, we're back in the storm. As Neil mentioned in the column, this is not based on any specific comics, so we're not, don't know exactly what's going on, but we do have some ideas, both because of television and Green Lantern lore, but I want to see where we're starting. Neil, how many lantern types can you name?
I think you're asking me how many colors can I name, because there are many colors of lanterns.
One is, I mean, a couple of them are not technically named after colors.
I guess that's true.
So, but I will say the title of the show is Lanterns. So I do think we're leaning into not only multiple Green Lanterns, but I expect at least one different type of color lantern.
Well, I mean, just based on the trailer and the fact that they cast someone as Sinestro, I think we're also going to see the yellow come out, right?
The Sinestro core.
I know that much about Sinestro is that he starts off as a Green Lantern, but then becomes a yellow lantern. And yellow is fear, right? They each have their own sort of emotion, like the Pixar movie.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like green is willpower.
Yes.
If I remember correctly. And that's something the show has espoused very directly in how explaining it to us. Yellow is fear. Orange is greed.
Yeah. Or avarice, but the same thing.
Yeah. I know there's a Red Lantern Corps. I'm not entirely sure if I remember what their whole deal is. I think there's a white one that's like the Fountain of Life kind of thing.
Yeah, life.
There might be a black one.
There is.
There's a Indigo one.
There is an Indigo one, yeah.
That I believe has a crossover with Star Trek, if I remember correctly, at one point.
Oh, okay.
That
I don't remember that.
Star Trek involves like the Indigo tribe, and it's kind of a Green Lantern thing. Mm. I mean, there's all kinds of nonsense. Green Lantern is also crossover with like Planet of the Apes. So like DC is very liberal with where the lanterns show up. I think those are the ones that I remember kind of off the top. But I agree
with
you.
The important ones.
Naming the show Lanterns and not Green Lanterns or Green Lantern feels very specific. Like they want to get into multiple types of lanterns. And it's, you know, because we're setting up shop in a true detective aesthetic and a true detective vibe, we're going to slow roll a lot of that stuff. But I would say even in the Weeks Ahead trailer, we're already going to start to see stuff jump off where we're going to be in space. So obviously Sinestro is going to be here at some point, you know, and even though they've said in multiple interviews, the three showrunners, Chris Mundy, Lindelof and Tom King, that like James Gunn didn't give them a specific like set of beats that they had to hit for this story that, you know, are important to the larger universe, right? They're going to bring in Nathan Fillion, of course. But it doesn't seem like there's a mandate of exactly where they want to hit, but I also feel like they're going to do it anyway.
Yeah, I think that's very possible. So I would say they're kind of, they have the capability to be very cheeky with the True Detective connection, because the first season of the True Detective ultimately built around the Yellow King as sort of like this phantom that's around it. And yellow is the color of the Sinestro Corps, but it's also fear. And when they're talking about the Green Lantern being a Green Lantern, they are talking about willpower, but they keep hammering home that the question, the like audition question, is, are you afraid? Which is very fear based. Right. So I think we're moving towards the Yellow Lanterns being some sort of motivating factor behind it. I don't think they're that actually like at the key of everything, because I do think the trailer has showed us we're getting Manhunters.
Right. And that's the other sort of kind of lantern. They're not lanterns necessarily, but the Manhunters, which a lot of people will just associate with Martian Manhunter, but there's a whole race of them, I guess. Yeah. And they were the precursor, right? They were what the Green Lanterns replaced after they kind of went rogue.
But made by the Guardians, who we get name checked here, and we know we're going to see one in this season because Laura Linney's playing the human version of this Guardian. But they're the people who decide what the rules are for the Green Lantern Corps. They run it off a planet called Oa, usually, and they are the ones who sort of bestow ring power onto people and integrate them into the core. They sort of run the police thing. But before that, yes, they had a whole group of Manhunters who were essentially android versions of peacekeepers, but like lots of non-Asimov androids, they took their directive too far and sort of became malicious. And here they may be, I think, being manipulated by something like a Yellow Lantern to be the antagonists here, which would, I think, add a good three layers. My guess is, if I had to take from this one pilot, first layer is the Makins. We're going to undo their like hold over the city.
Sure.
And their hold over the city, I think, will be extraterrestrial in some way. Whether or not they're the Manhunters or not, I think they will like maybe lead to that conflict. Above the Manhunters, I think, is whatever made Abensur crash in Nebraska, the thing that Hal's talking about, where it's like something made them come here. I don't think that was an accident. I think that ultimately is going to be some sort of hint at Parallax. Neil, if I say Parallax, do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, yeah, that's like the supercomputer, right? That lives on Oa.
Oh, no, Parallax is the yellow spirit of fear.
Oh, right, okay,
never mind. It's sort of like the, yeah,
but it
powers all
know,
the yellow lantern stuff.
Yes, he's yellow.
Yes.
I also know that he inhabits Hal Jordan at some point. So that was one of the things that, like, when we were talking about how Hal Jordan comes back all the time, I'm like, yeah, they could kill Hal Jordan off, but he can come back next season with yellow eyes, and he's Parallax now.
So, and then the idea of Parallax was in the initial Green Lantern comic book run, Hal Jordan sort of like turned bad and was defeated. And then in the Rebirth line where they were sort of retconning some of that, it wasn't that Hal Jordan turned bad. It was he was possessed by the like god of fear, essentially, in Parallax. So in driving Parallax out, it sort of allowed Hal Jordan to be redeemable, not necessarily somebody like Sinestro who does a full-on heel turn, which it looks like in the trailer he's already done. Or by the time we get to him in this series, it looks like he's in some sort of holding cell or something. He's not wearing a Green Lantern outfit. Mm-hmm. So I think that might happen. The question, I guess, for you, Neil, is how much of the cosmic stuff is involved with whatever happened in like 2006 that this show isn't telling us?
I mean, it's a good question because I think that, you know, I don't know this show's budget, but it's probably not massive, but it's probably bigger than Peacekeeper, or Peacemaker. Sorry. So I am curious to see like if all of this like True Detective parallel ground-based stuff is just sort of a, like a first half of the season kind of thing. And then all of a sudden we're, cause like the Weeks Ahead trailer, we see Alien Planet, which may or may not be Oa or may or may not be where Sinestro lives. So like there is the notion that if we're slow rolling, just sort of getting the audience used to the cosmicness of it, having Hal Jordan just kind of tell us stories about the aliens, and then all of a sudden, back half of the season, aliens everywhere, and we're flying in outer space, and we're doing all kinds of cool shit. That sounds fun to me. I don't know if I would just make a grounded detective story out of Green Lantern, where occasionally they do some manifest some fun green gags with the ring. I think that there is an ambition that this show could have that they're just not showing us at all. And the Parallax is a pretty good place to take that. And again, one of those things where it sets up larger implications for a greater involvement of the Lanterns in the DCU going forward, without necessarily having to like hit specific story beats.
Yeah. I would say I am expecting the transfer of the ring to happen sooner than we think. Mm-hmm. Like I would say like not like episode 9. I don't think this is a surf Dracula for Jon Stewart.
Sure.
I think Jon Stewart's going to get the ring. And then that second plot you're talking about opens up. And there has been some indication of people who've seen early episodes that there is sort of like a pivot around episode 5. So I would like it to be that, because I think there's a way to keep it grounded, but introduce these other concepts and like really show that the Green Lanterns are restrained by showing how, you know, either the Yellow Lanterns or, knock on wood, the trailers have a lot of red lasers from the sky. I would take some Rage Lanterns. Mm-hmm. They are the Red Lanterns. If they like that, the guy in the interrogation, the alien in the interrogation episode says they're here for vengeance. That is something that could apply to the Manhunters who were discarded, but could also just apply to the Red Lanterns. That's their entire thing. Mm-hmm. So it'll be an interesting way to talk about the differences in these powers without, like you're talking about, giving over to something the 2011 movie did, which is just become, you become a light show in space,
right?
Which is not something this series seems interested in doing at all.
Yeah, and I think my reading on the point of this series is to lay groundwork for the cosmic stuff in the DCU, right? Is to lay groundwork that they're not only, you know, like, okay, so we put a Green Lantern in Superman and he's fun and he's silly. He's got a weird haircut and he's played by Nathan Fillion. But if the DCU is going to want to tell larger stories, right, big team up stories, you can't, as Zack Snyder found out, you kind of can't do a great Justice League movie where there's like intergalactic threats heading toward Earth. And then there's no Green Lanterns around, because like the whole point of them is they're here to defend Earth from that, you know, like that. This, unlike the MCU, in this universe, Earth has a very specific, you know, beat for space cops. And if the Green Lanterns don't show up, it's like, wait, why didn't the Green Lanterns show up? Like, they're kind of, that's kind of their whole thing, is if aliens come down, they're supposed to be here to protect us from that. Yeah. And so in a way that we'll never know that they were aliens.
And so I think the plot that I'm most looking forward to is that I think whatever happens in 2006 is a disillusionment with the Guardians, which is basically the ACAB question that this show is going to apply to itself. Mm-hmm. Is we're going to be super into space cops. We're going to think that Hal was doing the right thing. We're going to watch Jon Stewart do what should be the right thing. And then it's going to turn out the people up top might be rotten. And so what does that mean in terms of what we're enforcing? And so I'm expecting he hasn't made a backup of himself since 2006, because the backup of itself would like alert Oa or something, because the ring has like a mind of its own. And so whatever Hal's been doing since 2006, not only has he
dodging not the himself, intergalactic flock camera that he has to wear on his ring.
Exactly. And maybe caused this idea of having a backup to begin with, as far as we know, because it seems like in 86, they don't necessarily say that every Green Lantern has a backup Green Lantern. But suddenly that is the position that John's in 2016. What happened between those periods? Gonna have to find out.
Sure.
But Neil, is there anything that you are looking forward to this season that you're hoping they actually get to?
Well, I mean, the Weeks Ahead trailer is interesting because obviously they name checked the Manhunters. There's Guy Gardner, who I think this is a really good opportunity for them to explain why he's a Green Lantern in 2025. If Hal Jordan was theoretically still around. I'm very excited to see when and where they do the outer space stuff. And they've shown Sinestro multiple times in the trailers. So I think that is one way to signal to people who are old Green Lantern heads that we are going to see a bunch of other different types of aliens and lanterns, potentially, like some of the really fun, goofy ones. That could be fun. And I would not blame them for holding that out of the trailers, because that's kind of a fun surprise to have. And I mean, this show just keeps throwing favorites at me. So I'm excited to see Laura Linney do whatever Laura Linney's going to do here as the Guardian. She's just a really, really cool actor. So, and I'm also one of the directors on the list is Stephen Williams of Lost and Watchmen and all kinds of stuff. But I'm curious to see if there's going to be any underwater stuff for Stephen Williams to shoot.
Ooh, underwater lantern things. Yeah, space stuff, underwater stuff. I'm excited to go there. I think, a little bit chuffed that in all the previews we got for season one of Lanterns, it was mostly footage from episode one. Mm-hmm. So that means that, like, this Weeks Ahead trailer, for all I know, that's like the next 3 weeks. I really don't know the scope of what they are figuring out at this point.
Definitely holding some stuff back about this show. And I think, you know, that is probably part studio note, probably part self-awareness by the creative team that they don't want to show first of all, those effects could still be in progress as they're cutting these trailers. I hope they're done by now, but also this notion that, like, one of the problems with the 2011 movie was that it got really goofy really quick, and I think they want to ease the audience into the more fantastical elements of the Green Lantern story, right? They want us to think that this is a show about Kyle Chandler driving in a car and occasionally just flying off into the air And then by the end of it, I think it's going to be something a little bit different, a little bit more robust and comic booky than just a True Detective riff.
Do you think this series has aspirations to a second season?
I mean, I think that that's something they could build to. The question is, again, that actually does become a question of where does this fit in the larger DCU plan? Mm-hmm. Right? Because like I said, I think they want to exit this series with the audience having a really...
Jon Stewart's in World of Tomorrow. Yeah,
like we know he's in World of Tomorrow. So they want to exit this series with the audience having a good understanding of where Jon Stewart came from and what he is like as a Green Lantern before he's like flying around with Superman. So I think that like, if that's it, then it's a one season in and out. But I would say that if it's very successful, I would not be surprised if they leave the door open to storylines that they can come back to. Because again, the Lantern stuff is robust. The lore of the Lanterns is robust in the sense that most people only identify with like the Green Lantern or the Yellow Lantern, but the comics have expanded that far beyond in multiple very cool storylines. So I think I'm curious to see if they do a Parallax and they do a Hal Jordan being inhabited by Parallax. Is that something that becomes core to being resolved in this season? Or is that like the cliffhanger you end the season with to be like, Hal Jordan will return as Parallax in question mark.
Yeah, I am into it. I would say there was a photo of the, I think it's at the writer's room or maybe it was the production staff a couple months back that they did sort of like for wrap. And there was the front row of people were sort of like crouched down and the back row people were standing up. And with the front row, there was a little character that they blurred out, like it was like a statue or a maquette. Mm-hmm. So I am hoping that we get Chip the Squirrel Lantern.
Sure.
And yeah, that's just like a little bit we throw in to be like, and the world is weird, but otherwise we're in this like grounded mystery story.
Well, and I think, you know, you kind of have to look at how they've approached the DCU's like TV projects so far, which is that they are very tangential to the films, right? Peacemaker is born out of the Suicide Squad movie and the popularity of that character, but also is seemingly setting up stuff that we will see in movies or in other shows. Like they've talked about how, at least in interviews, that the concept of Salvation, the, you know, spoilers for Peacemaker season two, I guess, but the prison universe that exists in the DCU where Peacemaker does end up at one point, where it's like this is a mirror dimension of the multiverse where we can throw away the villains and they can't get out, and it's like this weird planet, which oddly enough was a George R. R. Martin pitch to DC. So we're back to George. And that shows up in Peacemaker. Apparently it's going to show up here. So I do think that even though they're saying, oh, this doesn't have any specific story beats that it needed to hit in order to serve the larger universe, that's a lie. I think that there's all kinds of stuff in here that's going to serve the larger universe and tie in otherwise. Because I would say, and again, this is based on James Gunn having lived through working in the MCU and now being in charge of his own thing on the other side. It seems like the DCU shows are there to feed story into the movies, but not in a way that is like super consequential just yet. I actually think Lanterns could be the one where it is fairly consequential that you see Lanterns before you see World of Tomorrow. Because like you don't need to, Peacemaker shows up in Superman, right? He's like on a TV show talking about Superman. Like, I don't know. You didn't have to see Peacemaker to know what his whole deal was about. I mean, you barely could have seen Suicide Squad to know what that was about. It's just, you know, there's John Cena being funny. So I think that it'll be interesting to see if Lanchards kind of turns the corner a little bit on that because of this being sort of the setup ground for Jon Stewart. And I kind of think he will be an important player in if they want to move toward doing like Justice League centric movies and stuff, you know?
Yep. I am into it. Show me that squirrel. Canonize the squirrel.
Who's the big guy? There's the squirrel. There's also
Moog or.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's another possibility. And I guess it could be a tiny maquette of him and not of the squirrel. I was just hoping it was a full size squirrel like they would use on set.
Give me big dude. Let's go.
For a CG reference. I don't know. It's the James Gunn TCEU. Is there a project that doesn't have a pet in it? Eagly, Crypto, Crypto. Give me a squirrel.
Yeah, there's not really a project that doesn't have some sort of animal companion. Which,
give me the squirrel.
One of my
give
favorite James Gunn things, Animal Companions, the Rocket Raccoon Rule.
Damon Lindelof has done so many series. He's got so many tools on his belt, but he needs to add the animal sidekick tool to his belt. It's been years since he's Light Vincent, so let's go back and give him a squirrel pal. Anyway. I'm excited for Lanterns. What a animating HBO show. We will be following it through the first week of October. So make sure to subscribe wherever you're listening and or watching to us. And check us out over on Patreon, patreon.com/DSMENEANDNEIL. If you want us to talk about at least three time periods on the Netflix TV show Dark or some hot movies, the hot meaning temperature. I don't know, maybe Dog Day Afternoon, sexy to you. It's up to you. Anyway, we will be right here side-eyeing Nebraska until next week.